And now we are going to bring you a special commentary on this news by Mr. H.V. Kaltenbaum, speaking from the NBC newsroom in New York. Mr. Kaltenbaum.
Here he is, Mr. Kaltenbaum.
Good evening, everybody. And tonight I feel like talking like Gertrude Stein. The war is over. The war is over. The war is over. Peace has come. Peace has come. Peace has come. Yes, you can say it with emphasis, for it's ringing in millions of hearts all over the world tonight. That glad, glad news that we've been waiting for years. And here it is. Sometimes it hardly seems for a moment that it can be true. We've become so immersed in war. We have lived the war so completely, so intensely, that this transition from one moment to the next into peace seems almost impossible to realize. And yet, we know it's true. We know that the President of the United States has told us that it was true. And here is what he said. The words deserve repeating again and again. I have received this afternoon a message from the Japanese government in reply to the message forwarded to that government on August 11th. I deem this reply a full acceptance of the Potsdam Declaration, which specifies the unconditional surrender of Japan. In the reply, there is no qualification. Arrangements are now being made for the formal signing of surrender terms at the earliest possible moment. General Douglas MacArthur has been appointed the Supreme Allied Commander to receive the Japanese surrender. Great Britain, Russia, and China will be represented by high-ranking officers. Meantime, the Allied Armed Forces have been ordered to suspend offensive action. The proclamation of VJ Day must wait upon the formal signing of the surrender terms by Japan. Following is the Japanese government's message accepting our terms. Communication of the Japanese government of August 14th, 1945, addressed to the governments of the United States, Great Britain, the Soviet Union, and China, with reference to the Japanese government's note of August 10th regarding their acceptance of the provisions of the Potsdam Declaration and the reply of the governments of the United States, Great Britain, the Soviet Union, and China, sent by American Secretary of State James F. Burns under the date of August 11th, the Japanese government have the honor to communicate to the government of the four powers as follows. 1. His Majesty the Emperor has issued an imperial rescript regarding Japan's acceptance of the provisions of the Potsdam Declaration. 2. His Majesty the Emperor is prepared to authorize and ensure the signature by his government and the Imperial General Headquarters of the necessary terms for carrying out the provisions of the Potsdam Declaration. His Majesty is also prepared to issue his commands to all the military, naval, and air authorities of Japan and all the forces under their control, wherever located, to cease active operations, to surrender arms, and to issue such other orders as may be required by the Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces for the execution of the above-mentioned terms. Nothing could be more complete, more absolute, more devoid of the slightest qualification. The one point of doubt is the text of the rescript to which the Emperor refers in the first point of his declaration. He says that he has issued an imperial rescript regarding Japan's acceptance of the provisions of the Potsdam Declaration. It is quite possible that that is the document which he will read over the radio to the Japanese people at 11 o'clock Eastern wartime, and of which NBC will give you a full report. And so we come to the close, or near the close, of a momentous day. And what a curious day it's been in the history of the war. Those of us who followed the press and radio bulletins since the day began have lived in a twilight zone between war and peace. Not long after midnight, Domei, the official Japanese news agency, told the world that Japan had surrendered. When radio's instantaneous transmission carried that news to the 48 states, the celebrations began. They became riotous in many cities as the morning wore on. But there was no more news. Early reports that the surrender note had reached Switzerland were denied. For hours, there was a feeling of frustration. Then, in mid-afternoon, came a broadcast from NBC's Max Jordan, which electrified those who heard it. Scoring one of the big beats of the war, Jordan gave us the first real news of the day. The Japanese note had reached Bern, he said, and would be at the White House in 2 more hours. It accepted our surrender demand in principle, and those who knew what the note contained believed the war was over. In a later broadcast, Jordan revealed that a fairly lengthy note had been compressed into 160 Swiss code words, which RCA transmitted from Switzerland in just 12 minutes. The note reached the State Department at 6:04 p.m. Eastern wartime. The White House had already learned its general contents from Leland Harrison, our minister to Switzerland, and at 7 o'clock tonight, the news reporters who had been waiting for days around the White House were called into the president's office, and the president gave them the momentous news. He gave them more news at the same time. He told them that something like 5 million American men now in the armed forces will be released to civilian life within the next 12 to 18 months. The Board of War Production told us that all labor controls are off, off at once, so that labor is once again a free agent to seek whatever market suits it. Prime Minister Attlee, also at 7 o'clock, voiced his impression of the peace. In serious, dignified tones, the new Prime Minister expressed something of the spirit that has dominated the peoples of the world over these last war-torn years, and in the most sincere tones gave thanks that the day of peace was at hand. And as a generous ally, he paid a particular tribute to the part played by the United States in winning this war. For as he pointed out, without American help, it might have lasted for many more years. And he proclaimed as holidays for the British people, and what people are better entitled to them, next Wednesday, that is tomorrow, and Thursday. And by the way, President Truman made a special point of thanking the federal employees who in this country have worked long hours, very faithfully, very devotedly, and who have received, as he pointed out, comparatively little credit for their contribution to the victory. And so, in deference to them, and as a slight reward, they too will have 2 days of holidays, tomorrow and on Thursday. And even as I speak in Washington and in New York, wherever NBC's microphone has been turned, you have heard the cheering crowds. You have heard something of the enthusiasm that has seized the people of this nation, this sincere expression of joy that the war is over. Obviously, this is not the time to point out the many serious problems that are still left. Yes, we know they are serious. There's the problem developing right now in China, where the communist forces and the nationalist forces are both striving to take over from the Japanese, where there is a struggle between these two factions of that ancient country, each striving to control as large an area as possible of ancient China, and that creates a problem which will have to be solved if strife is not to continue in that great part of the world. For many months, the United States Army has been working out its plans for the occupation of Japan. It is probable that this occupation will be shared by four powers. The president indicated as much tonight: Russia, China, Great Britain, and the United States. Now it happens that there are four main islands of Japan, and a logical division would assign one of these to each of the big four, with perhaps joint representation at Tokyo, the capital, as there is joint representation in Berlin. In all probability, the United States, which has played the dominant part in the victory over Japan, would assume responsibility for the main island of Honshu, which surpasses the other three taken together in both area and population. Honshu includes not only the capital city of Tokyo, but such cities as Kobe, Osaka, Nagoya, Shimonoseki. It also has a great many important harbors, all of which will soon be occupied by the United States Navy. For at the very moment at which I speak, the ships, the great floating ships of the United States Navy, which have been standing off Tokyo and other ports of Japan for the past 48 hours, are moving in to take control. For in a very few hours, that control will actually be established. General MacArthur must have been notified in advance of his appointment. Undoubtedly, he is on his way on board of one of those great battleships, moving in towards Japan to exercise that control as Supreme Allied Commander, which the Emperor has agreed in his communication to us he will exercise, with the complete collaboration of the representatives of the Japanese government, including the emperor himself. The logical island for Russia to take over is Hokkaido. This lies between the northern end of Honshu and the southern end of Sakhalin Island, which is now being occupied by the Russians. Hokkaido is closer to the Russian mainland than any of the other three main islands. Great Britain may want to take over the island of Kyushu. This is nearest Hong Kong, Shanghai, and the other Chinese ports, where the British have large commercial interests. And you can depend upon it that the British Navy is going to try hard to take over Hong Kong before the Chinese take over, because the British, as a matter of prestige, want to take back from the Japanese that great port which they lost to the Japanese so early in the war. But China, which desires to incorporate Hong Kong with China, will feel that her control of the port would be tremendously important in order to better negotiate with the British, and so the Chinese will also try to get there first. However, that problem, I'm convinced, will be settled amicably, that there will be a mutually satisfactory arrangement between China and Britain over the great port of Hong Kong. China could participate in the occupation of Japan by taking over the smaller island of Shikoku, which lies between Kyushu and southern Honshu. China will also take over the Pescadores Islands and the large island of Formosa near the Chinese mainland. Formosa was taken away from China by Japan at the end of the Chinese-Japanese War of 1895. Under the terms of the Cairo Declaration, Formosa goes back to China. It is a well-developed, fertile island which will prove a valuable accession to China. The War Department has given special training to 2,000 American officers of occupation. In Japan as in Germany, the United States will work for the adoption of a single coordinated control policy. It is expected that Russia will be responsive to American wishes for unified control. This country played the dominant part in the victory over Japan, which has now been achieved. Russia is also much more concerned with reestablishing her interests in southern Sakhalin Island, in Manchuria, and in Korea. She lost her position in these areas 40 years ago, at the end of the Russo-Japanese War. Our immediate short-range problem in Japan is to eliminate the military-industrial clique that has dominated the country ever since Japan accepted modern ideas 60 years ago. It is this group of generals, admirals, tycoons, and aristocrats that has carried Japan into four wars of aggression in just 50 years. Each war brought vast accessions of power, prestige, territory, and resources. Now, by the peace treaty Japan is about to sign, she goes back to where she started when she made war on China in 1895. There was one note on the Tokyo radio today which we can approve. General Tada, president of the Japanese Board of Technology, said this: "From now on, the Japanese people must show their indestructible strength by contributions to every field of culture. Then the world will look up to our virtues and come closer in friendship." It was because the Western world admired Japan's culture and Japan's progress that there was real friendship between Japan and the United States 40 years ago. Then, easy success in the First World War stimulated latent militarism that led Japan first to oppression, then to disaster. Now, time must pass before friendship can come. Good night. And here's Lyle Vann for the Pure Oil Company.
Good night, Mr. Kaltenbourne. Well, there it is. This is it. The hour we've all worked and fought and prayed for. And with what a breathtaking hurricane of Allied power it finally swept upon us. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, the peoples of this world are going to have to meet and solve terrific problems born of that very newfound power that brought quick victory. But tonight, let's just thank heaven it's over and celebrate the hard-won glory. This from your friends at the big blue and white Pure Oil sign. Friendly neighbor Pure Oil dealers present H.V. Kaltenbourne in the news Monday through Friday at this same time. Be sure with Pure. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
It is now 8 o'clock Eastern Wartime. This is WEAF, NBC in New York.
The services seem to have forgotten their traditional rivalry and the thrill of all this victory. Just now, down below me here, I can see a soldier and a sailor exchanging uniform caps and marching off down the street together with their arms around one another's shoulders. Young America's having his big chance tonight. There's a young fellow about 10 years old over here across the street who's doing a land office business in American flags. He's selling more than he can keep in stock. As something of a portent of things to come, just a few minutes ago, when traffic still was moving a bit down here in front of me, down below on the street, a motorist stopped his car long enough to write "for sale" all over and apparently expecting a new car very shortly. Whether he gets it or not remains to be seen. All of this is going on in a sea of torn paper, streamers, confetti, and they're still coming down. Across the street from me, I see a newsreel photographer taking pictures of this crowd which is marching up and down State Street from Madison Street on my right back up to Randolph Street. All the intersections are jammed. It looks like, right in front of me here, the midway of a World's Fair. The first paper downpour came this afternoon when word was flashed that the Jap surrender reply had been received at the White House, but then more filled wastebaskets apparently were found because there's still more in the air. This morning, as I reported to you from down here in the Loop, there was very little activity. It was a rather dull weekday in Chicago's Loop. Now all that's changed. This is like Mardi Gras in Chicago. And now as I speak to you here, the throng has grown in density and the street below is blocked in either direction just as far as I can see by leaning out over the marquee here. A host of blue coats and MPs are on duty to prevent any undue violence, but so far they haven't had to interfere at all. Incidentally, you probably heard that. There have been firecrackers, explosions, and all going off down here. A fellow down below me is simulating acute injury from that blast, which didn't hurt him a single bit. Incidentally, there's supposed to be now about 864 policemen on duty in the Loop. This morning, several of them told me they'd had no trouble at all. I wonder if it's still running as smoothly for them. Chicago is celebrating, but not too roughly, at least as yet. All of Chicago's taverns have been ordered closed for a 24-hour period, and the restaurants are following suit, and people accustomed to eating out generally are going to have a bit of trouble finding food tonight. But those down in the throng below me don't seem to care very much. Automobiles, whose owners have been saving gasoline for days, evidently, for this occasion, are jammed to the hilt. There's one that's so loaded, it isn't even riding on the rim, it's riding on the running boards. Shortly before we went on the air here at the Roosevelt Theater, one driver's car went dead in the very middle of this throng as they were trying to reverse the direction of the streetcars. He couldn't get it started. Five policemen came to his aid and pushed the machine out of the path of the celebrators. Now somebody's brought out more firecrackers, just like 4th of July. This isn't like VE Day or the false VJ days. This is it here in Chicago. A whole string of United Nations flags have been run up on the storefront down to the right, down on the corner of State and Madison, Carson Perry Scott and Company. And that brings another wild cheer from the crowd now. People screaming up and down, a migratory crowd almost. Chicago is celebrating tonight, but a word of caution has just been added by William Spencer, the Regional War Manpower Commissioner, who is asking all workers to stay on the job. For those who want to hear the end of the war in a more sober fashion, Chicago churches are holding special services all day tomorrow. Well, that's the story from Chicago. Now to NBC in Denver.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Cecil Seavey with an NBC microphone down on the corner of 16th and California in Denver, where we have one of the most terrific traffic jams that Denver has ever seen. If we can get through the crowd here, get on up in here, and without getting run over, we're going to talk to a few people around here. You can hear the noise, the horns, the cars going on. Believe you me, this is one of the biggest things and the biggest noises that Denver has ever made. 16th Street, as far as we can see, clear down to the hills on the far end of the town. There's just a little of the noise. We're going to talk to some of these GIs around here in just a moment. I hope that we're being able to be read. Let's talk to this boy right here. Can we have your name, Sergeant?
James Martin.
James Martin, where's your home?
Denver.
Denver?
Yeah.
How long have you been back?
About 2 months.
About 2 months. What theater of operations were you in?
15th Air Force, Italy.
Italy? How does it feel with the war over?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Is that all you can say?
Oh, it's wonderful.
All right, Jim, thanks a million. Let's go right on down the street here and see what a few more of the people are doing. We've got a larger crowd here. Let's get a hold of a few people and find out just what is going on. We're going on down another city block here. These streets are so jammed that cars haven't moved for the last 15 to 20 minutes. They've not moved an inch. Other cars have been sitting here for ever since, about 2 minutes after 5 o'clock. There were speakers in front of the NBC building on California Street here in Denver, and those speakers were quiet until the break, and then everything broke loose. Cars have been going on. The big sirens all over Denver have been going full blast continually. We want to get down here and talk to just a few more the military personnel. I believe that there's a sailor right down here. We'll try and get him. Come here, sailor. We want to talk to you. What's your name?
Bill Hearn.
Where are you from, Bill?
Chicago.
From Chicago?
Right.
What theater of operations were you in?
All of them. European and Pacific.
What's Portsmouth Pacific? Just a few shots going off here from Model A.
Oh, boy.
What?
What portion of the Pacific were you in?
Out west central and north Pacific, all of them. Okinawa, Philippines.
All right, Bill, what do you think about the war being over?
Well, that's the best moment of my life. You know what I'm going to do when I sober up?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to go, and I'm going to go in church, and I'm going to pray to thank God I'm alive.
Good for you, Bill. That's the spirit. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, in Denver, as in every other city across the nation, there will be church services, which will be held all the way. Here's going to be something interesting if we can get across the crowd here. We want to talk to one of the policemen who's trying to clear up the traffic jam. He can't. We've got streetcars, we've got buses, we've got cars tied up all along here. We'd like to talk to the police officer here just a moment, if we might. Trying to get the streetcars through, we had one interesting thing here. A woman was trying to get to the hospital, and she was held up for about an hour and a half or 2 hours. All right, Vern, let's go back up this way. Our engineer, Vern Andrews, is having more trouble keeping up with us than practically anyone else in the country. We've had a larger crowd following this NBC microphone up and down the street than has been doing anything else. Denver has blown wide open. It'll be blowing probably for the next 3 or 4 weeks. It's one of the grandest sights that we've ever seen, and, of course, one of the grandest feelings that we've ever had to know that the war is completely over, that peace has been signed. We've got a little bonfire going down right down here in the middle of the street. Always something doing. Cars are loaded, are packed completely. The bonfire is going right down here, and they're trying to get away from it. It's a hot fire. We won't even go near it. There's everyone here, the military particularly, are having a grand time. You'll see them with civilian ties, civilian hats, civilian coats, civilian pants. Well, they're celebrating, and rightfully so. We're coming back up to our starting point here in the corner of 16th and California.
We're taking out of Hollywood and NBC.
This is David Anderson speaking from Hollywood. All the barriers are down here, and perhaps in the background you can hear the noise of the band coming down the street. It's a complete contrast to VE Day. Office workers spill out of buildings and onto the streets in a flood tide. Shops emptied in the time it takes to say, Japs surrender. There's a riot of color and crowd below me as I stand on the roof of Hollywood's Radio City. Cars are lined up for blocks, jam-packed, horns blowing, papers cascading down from everywhere. Sirens are on the loose from here to City Hall in downtown Los Angeles, where Broadway is completely tied up. A couple of parades are in progress, one right down below me. And perhaps the biggest one is in the Negro section of the city of Los Angeles. Hollywood and Vine is a mad scramble of humanity. Every car has its running boards lined with Army and Navy personnel. The beautiful Hollywood girls aren't rationing their kisses, and you can believe me. Flash bulbs are popping as total strangers embrace. One of the most impressive scenes I observed in my quick tour of the vicinity was a packed lobby of one hotel where, as the strains of the national anthem came over NBC's network, the people stood with hats off, some of them with tears coursing their cheeks, and sang the words in a chorus that threatened to tear the roof off. Now, here's a picture from the war plants around here. The plant of Northrop Aircraft Company closed down immediately on receipt of the surrender news, and no night shifts will operate tonight. From Lockheed, all plants of the Lockheed Aircraft Corporation closed down at once and will remain closed for 2 days. Pandemonium broke loose at the Douglas aircraft plants when the announcement came over the public address system, but the plants continued in operation. Over in Movie Land, all of the studios have closed upon receipt of the official White House statement, and there will be no further takes on the movie lots until Thursday morning, unless the president declares Thursday a public holiday. And I have a personal word from Will Hayes, president of the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America. He said, with the rest of the civilized world, the motion picture industry joins in thanksgiving for an end to fighting. And here's Jim Powell.
Thank you, David. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to pass along a word about this impromptu parade that started. There was a group of about 8 or 10 army men with old slide trombones and various musical instruments. They started up the street a little ways. I mean up the street. I'm speaking of Sunset Boulevard. They came down to the corner here and turned up Vine and are now headed for Hollywood Boulevard. And now the parade is going, growing and growing too, on up the street, up to the boulevard. And in leading the parade is a cabaret coupe with, I would say 15 or 20 people on. And they're swinging out around, and the band is following them. And in back of that is a string of cars, three abreast, all the way down to the corner here. And it's a funny thing, all the cars seem to be headed up toward the heart of Hollywood Town, which is Hollywood Boulevard and Vine. A few of them seem to be going back home. Right across the street from us now, down below, is another coupe with a group of youngsters on. And I'm getting a signal here to be pointed up the street where somebody has thrown a sheaf of papers down onto the street that, as David has told you, is completely littered. Also, there are a lot of serpentine streamers being thrown down. And now our time is up, and we take you to San Francisco.
Hello, this is Bill Baldwin and Frank Evans speaking to you from Market Street, Taylor Street, and Golden Gate Avenue in San Francisco. Pandemonium has broken loose here since 4 o'clock this afternoon. The fire department is all out blocking off streets in the market. This intersection we're speaking to you from, 5 streets empty into this one intersection here, and it is just jammed with humanity. They're walking in paper up to their ankles all over. A truck was here a while ago filled with Kleenex and napkins. It's all over the street. Women's panties are all over the street. There was a whole truckload of them. We've got them here. Frank Evans has got his. And every... How about the war, fellas? You glad it's over?
Yes, sir!
Yeah! Frank, here's a boy from New York. He wants to say hello to him.
Right, thank you, Bill Bolton. What's your name, fella?
My name is Patty Laurie.
Where are you from, Pat?
Staten Island.
And got any comments on the news?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, beautiful.
Thanks a lot, Pat. San Francisco has gone mad, and now back again to Bill Bolton.
All right, fine. How about it, fella? Savannah, Georgia?
Savannah, Georgia. Wolf.
Fine, your name?
Yeah. Yasko in Jersey.
New Jersey.
Georgia.
Oh, wonderful. You know, the ironic thing about it is here, there's pandemonium broke loose. Last night, San Francisco's Market Street was in shambles, and here's another boy here. Actually,
New Jersey.
What's your name?
New Jersey. Art Donnelly.
Fine.
Clifton, New Jersey. I'll be home on the 20th, a week from today.
Fine. Well, pandemonium has broken loose in San Francisco. We want to take you over to another place, but one thing very funny happened here a while ago. There are about 8 or 10 impromptu parades, flags from everywhere, and right leading the flag was a big sign that says Leo Carrillo appearing at the Geary Theater in The Bad Man. Right on down the street. Ambulances are all out. San Francisco is happy. This is the largest staging area in the United States, and they're really doing a wonderful job. Frank, anything else?
No, Bill, except this is the most tremendous thing that I've ever seen. It even beats Times Square on New Year's Eve. But now that's enough from down here in Market Street in San Francisco. Now we switch you to world-famous Chinatown in San Francisco.
Good afternoon and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, from the heart of world-famous Chinatown in San Francisco at Washington and Jackson, right in the middle of one of the gayest, grandest celebrations you have ever seen. The Chinese people here are milling on the streets, and you can hear the firecrackers and the fireworks in the background. It's really a wild celebration. We see soldiers, Chinese-American soldiers in uniform with battle stars entering into the grand celebration, though they tell us that when BJ is officially proclaimed, a celebration like this country has never seen will take place. But right beside me now, I have the president of the six companies, the famous six companies, and the president, Louis Kwan, who has a word to say. Mr. Kwan.
Peace reigns again. The long and costly struggle of humanity against the barbarism of Japan finally has come to a close. At last, soldiers of the allied nations now march homeward with solace and confidence to claim the peace for which they have fought and won.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kwan. As they told us just a few moments ago, this is just a preliminary celebration, but you can hear all the fireworks in the background, and the Chinatown is really gone wild. This is the largest Oriental settlement outside of China, and they have been fighting this war for a long 8 years. But I see that our time is up here, so this is Clarence Leisure saying goodbye from Chinatown in San Francisco. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The National Broadcasting Company presents the Reverend Edward N. West, Canon of the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York. Canon West.
It is my privilege to read this statement and prayer issued by the Right Reverend William Thomas Manning, Bishop of New York. Our nation joins with the whole civilized world in giving thanks to God for the victory which he has granted to the forces of world brotherhood and freedom. We and our allies must now, with the help of God, end war forever and establish a true and permanent world peace. The atomic bomb absolutely compels us to do this. Mankind must now choose between world peace and world destruction. May this mighty power now placed in our hands, this power which may be used for untold evil or for untold good, awaken us and all men to realize that the only real foundation for world brotherhood and peace is belief in Almighty God and acceptance of His law of righteousness by all men and by all nations. Let us pray. Almighty and everlasting God, Father of all men and ruler of the world, we give thanks to Thee for the victory which Thou hast granted to the forces of humanity, right, and freedom. We thank Thee for the courage and sacrifice of those in the armed forces of our country and of our allies who have brought this victory to pass. And we commend to Thy care and keeping all those who in this great conflict have laid down their lives for the sake of mankind. Grant, we beseech Thee, that the allied nations may continue to stand together for the abolition of war, and that all men everywhere, victors and vanquished alike, may be drawn together in one great family of nations, and, by Thy help and guidance, may walk in the way of justice, peace, and brotherhood. We ask this in the name of Him who is the Prince of Peace and the true light of the world, Thy Son, Christ our Lord. Amen.
Thank you, Canon West.
This is the Navy Hour dedicated to victory. From the nation's capital, NBC brings you the Navy Hour, written and presented by the Navy Department and broadcast around the world through the Armed Forces Radio Service. On tonight's broadcast,
the first broadcast of the new Navy Hour Chorus, a symphony orchestra of the United States Navy Band.
And that great star of stage and screen, Miss Tallulah Bankhead. Now your master of ceremonies, one of the outstanding announcers of the country, now a Navy lieutenant, Fort Pearson.
Thank you and good evening. First, a message from the Secretary of the Navy. He has decreed that uniformed and civilian personnel of the Naval Service, except for key personnel in offices and mail rooms, may take tomorrow and Thursday as a holiday. Yes, this has indeed been a week of high emotion and thanksgiving throughout the world. Tonight on the Navy Hour, we're deeply conscious of the millions of men and women, both at home and overseas, who have achieved this brilliant victory. We open our program, therefore, in proud salute to the winning team, to the Marines, the Army, the Coast Guard, and the ships and men of the United States Fleet. The new Navy Hour Chorus, under the direction of Lieutenant Lara Hoggard, presents This Is My Country.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast. We take you now to NBC in the Pacific.
Standing by. This is Joe Heinlein with the American Third Fleet off the coast of Japan.
The official news that the war is over came to the Third Fleet several hours after carrier planes had launched another attack on the Japanese homeland. And as I talk aboard this battleship now, we can hear the roar of the plane motors as they return from their last mission against the enemy. Because we have had so many false peace rumors out here, the actual official news of the surrender caused very little excitement. While those throughout the fleet were doing their duties this morning, just as they've been doing them every morning. The bosun piped the crew to Catholic mess on schedule and ordered a clean sweep down of the decks fore and aft. The air crewmen were perhaps more jubilant than anyone else out here. They were saved the agony of another mission against Japan. And probably some of them are alive this afternoon who would have died if the peace had been postponed another day. News of the surrender swept quickly and quietly through the ship. There was no shouting or outward sign of celebration. We've done that twice before on false reports. 2 days ago, we were gathered on the flag bridge of the ship from where we were to watch the hoisting of the battle flag signalizing victory. And even as we stood there awaiting, a bogey, Navy parlance for unidentified airplane, was reported directly overhead. Gunners scrambled to their gun stations, and for a few exciting seconds, we were alerted for air attack. Later the same evening, the task force shot down 17 Jap planes. That's the greatest number we've had over the fleet since we've been out here. So according to the official reports, the war may be over. But the men of the Third Fleet, cruising less than 150 miles off the coast of Japan, will be as vigilant now as ever before. Some of them haven't forgotten that we were negotiating a treaty with the Japs at the time Pearl Harbor was attacked. However, that doesn't lessen in any degree the joy we feel that the United States, for the first time in nearly 4 years, is at peace with the entire world. This is Joe Hainline with the American Third Fleet off the coast of Japan, returning you to NBC in the United States.
Now back to Washington and the Navy Hour.
No one man won this war. It was a triumph of teamwork. Tonight on the Navy Hour, we have the kind of man the Navy has been counting on since Pearl Harbor. A CB who attacked and destroyed a Jap pillbox armed only with nerve and a bulldozer. Machinist Mate First Class Ray Tassoni, who was decorated with the Silver Star Medal for outstanding bravery.
Well, now that victory has finally come, it kind of leaves me with hardly much to say. You can bet I'm plenty glad, like everybody else. I'm not putting on a paper hat and tossing confetti in the street. It's okay by me for people to celebrate the way they want. Only personally tonight, I'm thinking of other angles on this victory. I'm thinking about some of my buddies that aren't around to join in the whooping and hollering. I'm thinking what some of them would give to be here tonight, and that's why I feel that there really isn't much for a fellow like me to say at such a time. But as long as they ask me to come here, maybe it would be okay if I said this. Out there in the islands, a man's picture is the States to be a certain way, a great place where you can get an even break, where your kid can grow up to be president, where you can get your car and take your family out Saturday night and have a little fun. Some of the big shots in other parts of the world started out to change all that, but thank God they didn't succeed. I fought alongside some great guys, and now that the fight is over, I know they feel the way I do. We're glad to have been on the winning team, and we're glad to have had a crack at the enemies of this country. If you ask me, it's a great country, let's not ever forget it.
All over the world tonight, the guns are silent for the first time in years. Countless men of many nations gave their lives to achieve this silence. It is fitting on our Navy Hour tonight to acknowledge our debt to our allies in battle. And so we offer with gratitude a victor melody. We salute the men of the British Empire who fought beside us in tropical jungles and shared our dangers and shared our victory. To the British. Salute the men of Russia who fought the Germans so well for four bloody years and took up arms again to stand beside us against Japan. To the Russians.
This is Robert St. John in the NBC newsroom in New York. Tonight is a night such as America has never known before. America has gone wild. Bedlam rules Manhattan as it does most every other city in the country. We can look out of our skyscraper windows here at the RCA building in Rockefeller Center and see the milling thousands shouting their way joyously through streets that are ankle-deep, knee-deep in some places, in ticker tape and torn-up telephone books and tons of miscellaneous paper. Shots ring out every few minutes. The din makes the noise here in our newsroom sound like soft orchestra music by comparison. Peace. Peace, isn't it wonderful? The crowds shout and sing. There's utter abandon. No New Year's Eve was ever one-tenth what this night is. It started slowly. It started at 7 p.m. when the radio brought to waiting millions... Hello. I must interrupt myself, ladies and gentlemen, to switch you. Now we bring in another point in this madly celebrating world. We switch you to Okinawa.
These terms were flashed over the Okinawa radio at 8:05 this morning. The announcement from the White House came after another night of blankness here, following yesterday afternoon's report from Dome, the Jap news agency, that the enemy had agreed to Allied peace terms. Despite the belief that peace was close, many awoke on Okinawa this morning with some suspicion that the Japs were up to a trick of some sort, since the delay had been so long. But now that it is finally and definitely over, a joyful, happy atmosphere exists all over Okinawa. It is a hot, muggy day here, and practically everyone is taking it as easy as possible. Many of us have taken off our shirts and are sitting in the shade talking it all over. It seems too good to be true, almost too hard to realize that we won't have to make any more difficult landings on ever-increasingly difficult beaches. When the news reached here, some planes of the Far East Air Forces were still up in the air. They were mostly fighter planes sweeping against Jap aircraft or against shipping, but not land targets. Although some of these flights were canceled at the last minute, others got through. One of the biggest overall strikes of the war was actually being planned today. 7th Air Force managed to call back its heavy bombers, but some fighter pilots of both the 7th and 5th Air Forces are now lost and may not be recalled in time. The news here is announced by President Truman that General MacArthur will head occupation forces was welcomely received by Army men. Everyone is now waiting anxiously for the occupation to begin and for the peace to be signed. Although President Truman's announcement did not state so in so many words, it is assumed by most that General MacArthur's new status will also make him the supreme Allied commander as outlined in the peace demands. This is Robert Chaplin of Newsweek, returning you to the United States.
We take you now to NBC in Times Square in New York.
NBC, Ben Grauer reporting on the NBC mobile unit, which now is the immobile unit because the crowds have just completely hemmed us in. This demonstration and this jubilation, which started about 2.25 hours ago, has, if anything, increased instead of diminished. There isn't a chance for us to get going. We'd have to mow down folks to do it, so here's where we're going to stay. Just a few minutes ago, you heard a report from NBC in Okinawa. We were listening on our shortwave transmitter receiver here over the din, hubbub, roar, babble, jangle, and clamor of this crowded and exciting scene. And so I yelled, anyone in this crowd here from Okinawa? Two smiling boys came up. They're Marine pilots, and they listened along with us to this broadcast 15,000, 12,000 miles away. What's your name, Lieutenant?
Lieutenant W.J. Dempsey.
Where are you from?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
And what's your name, Lieutenant?
Lieutenant Salmon from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh, you're both from Cincinnati, both buddies.
That's right. Been together for 3 years now.
You Marine pilot?
That's right.
Attached to which part of the division?
Well, at that time, we were Okinawa attached to the 2nd Marine Air Wing.
Were you flying combat over Okinawa then?
That's right.
Plenty of combat.
Enough of it.
Yeah. Did you just hear that broadcast from Okinawa?
I did.
Well, how does this whole thing, this VJ Day, feel to you?
Well, I was on Okinawa when VE Day was declared. I was just wishing I had Times Square. Just happened to be here on VJ Day. I feel mighty good about it.
That's putting it mildly, I bet. How about you, Lieutenant Salmon?
You know how anybody feels when they're over there. You want to get back home so bad you can't explain it to anybody. And now I'm so happy to be back, I can't tell anybody about it.
Well, thank you very much, Lieutenant. Thanks for joining us, and a very warm salute to you and to the Distinguished Flying Cross, which you both wear on your strap of service ribbon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer.
In New York, and the babble and confusion and excitement and swirling masses of humanity continue and, in fact, increase. Just a moment ago, something thrilling and dramatic happened. A Signal Corps portable searchlight, which was stationed about a block below us, we're approximately 43rd Street, flung on its 100 million or million watt arc and illuminated a whole block of Broadway. It struck this replica of the Iwo Jima flag raising in plaster, which is right alongside of us, and cast on the side of the Paramount building on the west side of Broadway a shadow about 150 feet high. The feet were planted on the fifth floor, and the tip-top of the flagstaff was up on the 15th floor of the Paramount building, a giant symbol of victorious American courage and fighting spirit. That's the picture here in Times Square as we go into the third hour of a joyous overflowing of pent-up emotion, which looks to me as though it's going to last right on through the night and on into dawn. A million madly happy New Yorkers who are expressing for the nation their joy that V-Day has come. And now from the NBC mobile unit in Times Square, this is Ben Grauer suggesting we find out what the state of affairs is at the movie capital as we switch across the continent to NBC in Hollywood.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bob Purcell speaking to you from the heart of the Los Angeles City Hall. At the moment, we're down in the communications room of the Los Angeles Police Department, where the complete pulse beat of the entire city of Los Angeles is being measured at the present time through the services of many dispatchers who are gathered around a horseshoe-shaped table taking calls that are coming in from the various police cars, the complete fleet that is out covering the city, and also sending calls to them which are being taken in another room that come from the citizenry by our usual telephone methods and are jotted down on notes and sent by a revolving belt over to these dispatchers so they in turn can keep in touch with the cars in the city for anything that might be happening at the present time. Right now, I'd like to have you meet Chief C.B. Harrell, Chief of the Los Angeles Police Department. Chief Harrell, can you give us a little idea of the kind of reaction that Los Angeles is having today here?
So far, it has been fine. We've had a considerable amount of traffic congestion, quite a heavy crowd on the street, but it has been orderly.
There has been nothing such as the breaking of big store windows or anything like that happening?
It hasn't been reported, no.
That has been largely due to a planned celebration that you and Mayor Barron got together on some time ago so that you could find out ahead of time what things might be happening and prepare for them. Is that right?
I believe that's true.
Chief Harrell, at the present time, ladies and gentlemen, is standing here in the dispatcher's room with a pair of earphones on his head. And he, at the moment, is going to go in on the line and talk to car number 42, which is down in Chinatown, and ask the police officer in that car what the reaction is down there. Chief?
Car 42, 42. What is the condition in your district at the present time? Car 42. 42. What is the condition in the district at your time, at this time?
42 is very quiet, not too much celebrating, KGPL.
What? Car 42, what's your location at the present?
42, we're at New High and Orange Street, KGPL.
The condition down in the Chinatown area, then, Chief, is?
Ord and New High is clear at the present time. That's in the center of our Chinatown district.
I wonder if there's any other car that you could get in contact with. Can the dispatcher tell you? Is there any other car that might be in a different section of the city that can give us an idea of how Los Angeles is celebrating? Unit 37. All right, let's get in touch with Unit 37.
Car 37. Car 37. 37. What is the condition in your district at the present time? Car 37, 37. What is the general condition in your district at this time?
There's no call coming through from car 37 at the moment. He's probably very busy driving around in a section and didn't catch the chief's call at this particular moment. However, before we wind up here, I would like to take just another moment to describe this vast network, which is measuring the pulse and the heartbeat of this great metropolis, finding out everything that is happening on this VJ Day or V-Day, whichever term you please to use. Car 122 evidently is ready to come in. Let's find out what's happening there.
Car 122. Car 122. What is the general condition in your district at this time?
Where is car 122, Chief? Do you know?
77th Street.
77th Street, that's... The which district?
The Watts District.
That's out on the south side of Los Angeles, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, that concludes our broadcast from the heart of the City Hall, from the communications room, a broadcast with Chief C.B. Harrow, where we've talked to a few of the police cars to find out the reaction. Now, this is Bob Purcell taking you now to NBC in Washington.
President Truman has just proclaimed Wednesday and Thursday legal holidays. He's provided, too, for premium pay to those essential workers who must remain on the job. Now, this means, ladies and gentlemen, not only a government holiday, but a national legal holiday, such as the 4th of July. Banks and stores will close, and those workers who must remain at work will get special overtime pay on Wednesday and Thursday. Washington, incidentally, isn't waiting for tomorrow to celebrate. For a picture of the demonstration in our capital, I switch you now to NBC's mobile unit with Bill Herson.
Well, things are still the same here, except we've calmed down just a little, but the crowd has doubled. I'm going to guess and say 20,000 people here at Lafayette Park, just across from the White House, across Pennsylvania Avenue. For the first time from Washington, let's talk to the man on the street. We've brought you the color on previous broadcasts. Let's see what the man on the street in the person of three lovely ladies has to say. And first of all, your name, please.
Ruth Heffern.
Where were you when the thing broke today?
Oh, I was in Lafayette Park in front of the White House.
Uh-huh. Right here, then?
Yes,
and,
I was.
And what did you do?
I immediately went to church for special services.
Oh, I see. And then back again.
Yes, I did.
You have a loved one in the war?
Yes, my husband.
Where is he?
Okinawa.
Well, thank you very much. And your name, please?
Alma Jones.
Alma Jones. Where are you from?
Here.
You work here in Washington?
I have.
You live in Washington? Mm-hmm. Were you born in Washington?
No.
I didn't think so. Where were you born?
In Virginia.
Is that so? And what do you do?
I work for the Bureau of Internal Revenue.
I understand. Well, now, let's imagine for a minute the war is over. Let's imagine for a minute that rationing, the restrictions are dropped. Rationing's all through. What's the first thing you're going to do?
A nice big beefsteak.
A beefsteak?